May 3rd, 2017 Clean Water Commission meeting will now start. I'll take the roll call. Jeffs? Just stay here. Mark?
I'm here.
Thank you. Dick has an excused absence. Michelle?
Here.
Jeremy?
Here.
Brendan? Holly is not here at the moment. Oh, David, I'm sorry. I missed you right in the middle there. David?
I'm here.
Thank you. Has everyone had time to review the minutes that were here at the last meeting? Are there any changes or revisions? Do I have a motion to accept the minutes?
Sure. So may.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you. And now the meeting is open for public comment.
Maybe. Just observing it.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we will welcome our new commissioners. Andrea, did you want them to tell them something about themselves?
Yeah, I was figuring that each of you could introduce yourselves to everyone else, and then the other commissioners also could say a little bit about themselves so that everyone gets to meet each other.
Oh. So let's start with David, and we'll go around the room.
There's so much I have to exclude. I can't tell you what I do for a day job. It would be a conflict of interest. No, my name is David McDevitt, and I've been involved with the Clean Water Commission for a couple of years now. I bring to the commission, having lived in the community for about 7 years, having lived, come up from the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, where I lived for a long time. I come with an MBA and a Juris Doctorate and a license to practice law, but not in Washington State, and an interest in developing a cleaner, safer community for all of us.
I work for a private company called Sound Data Plant, which is based out of Olympia. Sound quite a bit, but we have Southwest Washington and Portland based team, which I am one of the co-leaders managers for. We work in three primary areas in the basic plant restoration, and a lot with stormwater. So that was the interest for me getting involved with this. I've lived in Clark County my whole life, still live on family property out in rural Washougal. I've also lived in downtown Vancouver, so I've gotten to take to the urban and the rural balance of the community. I used to be much more involved in politics and local activities until I got real involved with work out in the
area. Yeah, this is Mark. I can't hear anything. You guys still there?
Yeah.
I guess maybe everyone speak up.
All right.
Not a problem. Can you hear me at this point? Just speak louder.
He's across the room, so it's hard.
I could not see my LinkedIn profile. But yeah, basically, trying to get back involved in the community at this level and competition with any private work. So.
Thank you.
I'm Michelle Gertz, and I've been a resident for over. Probably about 26 years here in the Salmon Creek, Flood and Highlands area of Clark County. My background is in wetlands for water treatment, water quality, stormwater, restoration, reclamation kinds of projects. I worked for CH2M firm for almost 30 years. Now I have a small consulting firm just doing interesting projects. And this is a way for me to give back, as people said, to the community, share what I know, learn more.
Thank you.
I'm Jeff Simmons. I work at Clark Public Utilities in the water department, and I do a lot of GIS mapping, so I deal with some of the capital improvement plans, which relates to some of the water planning. And I also have some property out in the sectors that have some interest in as well.
Thank you.
My name is Jeremy Hermes. I have an engineering and business background. I work for a technology company in the Beaverton area, so a little bit on the techie side also. Living in Clark County for 15 years, part of the research team.
Eric Lambert, Clean Water Outreach Specialist with the county. I work with public health, but truth be told, most of my work is with the Clean Water Division. I'm part of the CO team, the acronym of Solid Waste Environmental Outreach, and 75% of my scope of work is dedicated to fulfilling the NPDES requirements for outreach and education. Another 25% is doing some public health work that's also needed. I've been working in the county for almost 7 years. Prior to this, I worked, I coordinated the small acreage program at WSU Extension, which was funded by the Clean Water Program. And I just moved to into Vancouver as well, so now I live here too.
Thank you.
I'm Andrea Lowe. I work for Clark County in the Clean Water Division, and I'm a staff liaison to the Clean Water Commission. So I work in the Clean Water Division. Some of the other things I do are budget, finance, and basically any kind of support for the program. So.
Thank you. Mark, do you want to tell us about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Mark Schneider. I've been on the board for a couple of years now. I'm a self-employed chemical engineer. I live in Battleground with my wife and four kids. Kind of a special group here for us. I do a lot of traveling, and so I apologize for everybody there. I'm in Canada, so I appreciate you guys taking us with these conference calls. And so we'll kind of go from there. So Jeremy and I right now are serving on the research committee, and we'll have some more conversation about what we're up to.
Now I'm Marie LaManna. I've been on the committee here for 3 years, so give me if I stutter a little bit being the chair and using this thing. I work for the Clark Regional Wastewater District. I have a background in forestry and engineering and business finance.
And you took over chair in January, right?
Yes. So I just enjoy working on the different committees, doing public outreach, and hoping to lead this group and to some really good things this year. Okay. So we did the annual report for 2016 to the council. We always have to write a report. Basically, we're saying what we're doing, what we have done, what we would like to do, and what would the council like to do. So we had a really short slideshow. It went over very well. Dean was there. Eric and Andrea was there. And the time changed, so unfortunately David showed up after the presentation, but they kind of changed it last minute. So the council didn't have a lot of questions. They thought things went well. They did. Mark Bolt was very impressed that we were doing outreach, and he really encouraged us to maybe have a booth at the Clark County Fair. And as Dave and I talked about afterwards, you know, you have a wide audience there. You just don't have people that love to go to Earth Day and the Echo Fairs. You're getting everyone, you know. So that would be a great educational opportunity. The only problem is it is 2 weeks. And, fun, you know, have staffing it may be hard to do it that whole 2 weeks, even perhaps a couple hours a day, but that's something that the communications group may need to work on. And that was pretty much it. If anyone has any questions or would like to see it, it is on the Google Docs. And let me know if you're having any troubles trying to link to those sheets and the docs. Sometimes it's not the easiest thing, but it should be all posted there.
Is that in the
contact
or something?
Well, it's in August, so it gives us a little time to plan. Maybe we just do the weekend.
Is there an opportunity to add that to the agenda so we could spend some time?
Do you want to do it tonight or do you want to do it in July?
If we wait until July, it'll be short time to get the planning together, but I think it would be worthwhile to have
conversation. Do we want that subcommittee to go and maybe have a special meeting to plan it?
No, I think the quorum here can do that. I bet, my opinion, I mean, as far as it goes. And then if we have some marching orders, then that's fine. If we don't have some marching orders, but we have some other alternatives, we may be able to. I think it would be worthwhile to have a discussion. Do we have time on the agenda to do that, though? That's the initial question.
Yeah.
Okay, then I'll make a motion that we add 15 minutes for conversation to add it to the agenda, and let's have that conversation tonight. Then.
Do you want to talk about now because we're going right into the outreach events?
Sure, that would be. So there's been a proposal by Mark Holt that we have a booth at the fair. There are a number of considerations that we got to be aware of before we make any commitment about that.
Okay.
It's going to take some financial resources because it's going to have to be paid for to have a booth. I think they're not free.
Even for the county?
And
I think that we can get a business. There's what they call the River Ramble,
okay.
Which is dedicated to environmental outreach programs, and typically they
don't. And so those are free. That's great. That's good feedback. What about entry to the park for the volunteers that are going to go up there and spend time? Because that's a burden as well.
In the past, Chris Huggert has been the guy that's kind of overseeing all the fair and stuff. Coordination of it, and he's been able to get parking passes and admission passes to the volunteers. They give a set amount. You kind of ask how many volunteers you have, multiply up the number of days you got, the shifts you got, and they've been generous in the past with that.
Okay, and is that something that the solid waste side would want to partner with us on?
I presume that the master compost recycler will be there. And as of now, they're the only part of the CEO team that has a volunteer base that will allow that type of tabling, a person with one body there to table with. And so in previous years, I've had a small acres program there, even though I wasn't able to be there the whole time. I spoke to Chris. I said, look, this is an important message to have out there. He gets that. I'm with the Master Gardeners, who also had a great volunteer base to staff the booth the whole time. And he was very flexible in allowing us to be with the Master Gardeners, but just be beside them.
Sort of a combined, kind of a combined effort.
Kind of a combined effort. And he's fairly liberal about how combined that has to look. I mean, clearly we're going to look a lot different than the master compost and the site as well.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you can do that aesthetically by having, they have a green tablecloth, you have a yellow tablecloth, somebody else has a blue tablecloth, and kind of divide the space up a little bit. I mean, there's ways to accomplish that, but from a manpower standpoint and from a volunteer hours and staffing standpoint, that's really where it gets a little bit more of a challenge, especially when it goes on for about 2 weeks and there's 9 of us.
Yeah. And it goes quite late every year.
And So if we have other groups that we can partner with, and of course I want to applaud you, by the way, for pulling together all of the various groups throughout the county together, the River Keepers and the Watershed Alliance and all that together, because all that creates an opportunity as well for manpower to staff some of these kinds of things. And it gives us an opportunity to get that message out to the community, right? And that's been your baby from the beginning. So if you had a recommendation about how we could proceed with this, what would you suggest?
Well, I think one thing would be important to ask, you know, do you want a clean water commission table or like a broadly clean water table that also has information about clean water division, has information about stormwater partners, has information about the Clean Water Commission, kind of more broadly where we can potentially pull more resources into it. Because if we did combine like that, I know that there was an email going around, and I want to check back in with them about this, for having a county table or a county area, maybe a few tables, a larger space, primarily to solve this exact problem. The number of smaller departments, for example, folks that want to get the word out about current use taxation, for example, if there's two or three people working in that department, they can't staff that booth the whole time, but they can have a static display.
Right.
So the idea here was to have a county table with a bunch of departments and really split that out and share that time. What that would basically do, allow Clean Water Commissioners, you guys, and myself, and whoever else wanted to be there to represent Clean Water, to kind of be there. In addition, I would take some responsibility for putting in my time as a county member of this shared table.
Sure.
To make it. It would be larger than a table. We're talking about a few booth spaces together, and have a couple different things around there. So that was one idea that's been going around.
That sounds a lot more feasible than having our own thing and being in charge of our own thing and having to staff our own thing independently of everybody else. I'm feeling a lot more comfortable about the idea that trying to coalesce with and partner with other groups and organizations could make the feasibility significantly more positive.
Yeah,
I agree. I think the combined effort would be best. But we got a lot of people that would committed to go every day, but we ended up with two. So I mean, to have a full week or a week and a half of fair with our small, we're not combined.
To be honest, it's a free package.
Well, that's good to ask. I don't think what the frequency, what are the peak days and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I would think, as Reese suggested, focusing on some of those days that have as many or people there as possible, that would give the best coverage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that having that kind of foresight is really important. I'd say mornings and during the days, particularly the weekdays, it's pretty slow. Even the weekdays in general are somewhat slow. I think when the time picks up a little bit, it's when folks are heading from the dairy, Clark County Dairy, Queen Dairy Girls.
The milkshake
stand to the mountain truck race, so they go through the river ramble there. When speaking with Jane about this, she did make a point that, how many people are really going to stop? When you're at the fair, you're there to have fun, so there's that to consider. But I can't get past the fact that there's a number of people at the fair that really need to hear this message, and that we can make a bigger impact among people that don't typically go to an Earth Day event, who already kind of are part of the choir.
So your point about people there to have fun, there's enough going on at the fair that people don't even hit anything they want to. So considering too, if you are at my table, like, what are you going to talk about? You want to talk about more case variables for you?
Yeah.
The displays and demos and things so they can participate in.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the really big straws.
Yeah. Now, that being said, I am part of the SWEO team, and so I do have an in with them. For example, at Home and Garden Idea for this past weekend, I partnered with the Master Composter Recyclers. Now, there is, you know, we're kind of doing the same thing, but, you know, they're solid waste funded, and we're clean water fee funded. They have different jurisdictions, too. They're all over the whole county and all the municipalities as well. And I think their volunteers aren't prepared or that's not really their thing to talk about clean water, but it certainly does help if we could, you know, put it under a green neighbor's scope,
right?
Potentially. So there's the county thing, and then there's the Master Compost Recyclers thing. And if you notice, the logo of the Master Compost Recyclers has almost no county affiliation. I mean, it does in the corner, but and that's somewhat intentional. That is meant to look
right.
Like something that's independent of just a county thing. And so that has some benefits to it. And potentially we could try latching on with them, and they would have, you know, very steady volunteers if they participate.
So one of our challenges then would be to try to Would one of our challenges be to try to simplify our message so that they could get on board really quick? And if people were interested in deeper explanation about what that message is about, then we would have readily available resources that could be referred to without the other teams necessarily being completely aware of all of our programs.
I'm just wondering, right? Yeah. I think that's a really good question. I've gotten a little bit of pushback from introducing some clean water messaging into Master Compost Recyclers, but I've also been gaining some ground on that too. For example, hopefully later this month, as far as I know, I'm going to be speaking at the Master Composter Recycler monthly meeting.
Right.
To talk about the clean water connection, because, you know, there definitely are some.
And if there's a meeting that any of us can attend that would be beneficial for us to be involved with, I'm sure that some of us could do that. But if, you know, like the message, if our messaging could be narrowed down to say two or three sentences in a really succinct kind of a way. You know, then it doesn't necessarily have to be incompatible. In fact, we could figure out ways to make it compatible with just about anyone that we would be partnering with, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah. So I guess the thought would be, I think, at the end of the day, do you think it would be better to be with the county and be with some other county agencies and departments? Or to be with essentially another county agency department that doesn't look as county, if you will, that being the Master Compost Recycler
Right.
Universe.
Yeah.
Did you get a lot of
stuff? Personally, I'd be open either way. So I think our decision tonight is not necessarily as narrow as do we want to be involved with A or B. I think we need to rely on you to figure that out. I think our decision tonight has to be, do we want to be involved, and are we willing to step up and assist in volunteering for some of those hours, notwithstanding that we won't determine those hours or volunteer times until the July time frame.
Yeah, I think that's great. I want to be there. So I'm going to have to figure out how to latch on with somebody else. some way or another. And you know, kind of like what I did with the Home and Garden Idea Fair, I've been doing trenching for a long time, and I have a feeling of about when the most popular times to be there might be, and that's when I try to place myself there. You know, the Clark County Fair is a much longer event, and so you might be able to spread it out a little bit and more opportunities for you guys to join and share that message.
I'd actually like to hear a little bit more about the debrief of the other outreach events, because some of the feedback or some of the things that worked, some of the things that didn't work maybe so well, that might help guide us in how we approach doing the fair.
Yeah, and I guess I would preface that with their kind of what we said before, you know, the wide variance in demographics that attend. That's a huge factor. And so, you know, I guess, will you guys have anything to say about the Earth Day event?
I mean, really, for the event that we recently did, that big Earth Day, I don't know, did we anybody show up at the webinar?
Marie stopped by.
Yeah. So I don't know if the Earth Day, but I mean, what was nice is there was people actually come in there, and the display, actually, some of these handouts were there. The downspout one, and the cleaning up the cars.
Yeah,
these actually didn't get expensive. People would ask, why should I consider taking my downspout? I don't even know where my downspout's going, which means most likely won't throw an if they don't know where it is. If you actually were discharging into your yard, you might know the center of the winter. It was interesting because there's a lot of, actually, I think that was just wide range of people. Some people knew everything, some people knew or wanted to test everything, or people had no idea.
Yeah,
so I thought it was a good idea.
And after a little clarification, what you have here are the three parts of a trifold display that I created. We'll change this one, and I create these two. I'll take a watershed map, because everybody loves a map. It's a great conversation starter to ask what watershed you live in. And it really starts the conversation really well. The Clean Water Division is obviously kind of a lay of the land in who we are. And then this is one that we've been working on, kind of a call to action that bringing a message. And we came up with like the Do One Thing in the campaign, really to get people to come in and recognize that everybody does have an impact and everybody can do something to make a positive contribution to our clean water. And so we picked, you know, three things that people could do, and we directly have a little pledge tree. I have this preface, this when I first joined SWEO, I really wanted to incorporate everybody and be incorporated. A little bit of a black sheep being the only one. I know green schools, green neighbors, green business, and MCR, the Master Chemicals Recycler. Those four programs are solid waste funded and the clean water funded. So they're kind of all, and so I was like, okay, well, maybe we can make something to all do together. What if we did like a pledge where you could do whatever it is, and it'd be a great way to maybe collect some emails for the green neighbors to serve. They send out a monthly email, a monthly newsletter, which can include water stuff. And of course, the Green Neighbors website would be a great place to direct people for all sorts of information, because there's a lot of clean water stuff as well. But that didn't, it got some traction, and it got some pushback. And it was kind of like, well, they wanted to get people signed up for the Recycle Right app, and that was kind of their number one thing, which, you know, has a clean water connection too, because household hazardous waste, you know, composting, and making sure that yard debris is finding some right place. It's important for clean water as well. It turned out to be something that was a little bit less inclusive than I was hoping. We went ahead and did our own kind of thing. We have a little pledge tree here. People can write down which one of these five things they want to do. And they pledge to do that. They hang on a tree. It's not the most nasty thing quite yet. Hoping to develop more. But what I like about it is that you know, it's something that you can ask people to do. It's something that you can give people to say that they're going to do before they leave your group, which I think is important. You need that call to action. And you need to let people know that they're part of something. And so the other thing I like about it is one thing I talked to a lot of people about was you get a lot of questions like, oh, is this meant your downspout? Plant a tree? I say, well, yeah, you know. It's a lot of people understand how polluted it's getting for our water, but did you know that the volume of water coming out of our developed spaces is also a big problem for our streams? Oh, I had no idea about that. And so that starts another conversation, which a lot of people are unaware of. And so this is one thing that's kind of been the call to action. You kind of have like the eye-catching thing, who we are, the call to action. We have other programs going on too, like the Downspout Disconnect program, which will be in full swing. Well, maybe not in full swing, but yeah, I guess in full swing during the Clark County Fair. The only thing about that is it's for a targeted area. This is a pilot program right now, so there's going to be a number of people, particularly I'm guessing at the Clark County Fair, which there are a lot of rural residents who won't be a part of that pilot program. It's quite a narrow focus right now. But there's also like Friends of Trees, which is another kind of target thing. So that's why I really like the new one thing here. Because it's kind of catch all. Everybody can do one of those things.
Did the little canine scarves go over well?
Yeah, the canine scarves go over really well, always. Going to an event this weekend, the Southwest Humane Society is doing a walk and run for the animals at Esther Shore Park. It'll be interesting to see about how many people come to one event, and that's one really important thing that I've recently discovered about having the canines for clean water pledges there, is that it allows me to gather information on what jurisdiction people are coming from at a particular event. So that's also important for the type of outreach that we do.
That's where they filled out a little form. There's a little
funny clean water dog.
Yeah, a little clean water dog. Yeah, of course. With a little, so it's on there, and it's like, how do I do that? So then they fill it out, and you mail them, right?
Yeah. Typically, for that kind of event, we have them there, but it's not a problem at all. So,
yeah, mailing is a lot of effort.
Yeah. I thought we had more. So yeah, that's a great thing.
And that's what event is that?
So Buddy, Canines Clean Water, you can go to cleanwaterdogs.com to check out what that's all about. That is, Buddy's a funny animal, no pun intended. He's really good at very dog-focused events. I don't always feel comfortable letting Buddy be the spokesperson for clean water. But he's a really, I'll tell you, he steals the show a lot of times.
Is he a real dog?
No. Well, apparently he's actually based off a real dog from somebody that
stuff works.
Oh.
Yeah, and it originally was a cow, but for some reason it kind of worked.
So this event, that event's coming up some weekend in the near future.
Yeah, that's this Saturday is the walk and run for the animals. Yeah, so we'll meet up at the crack of dawn, setting up like a half marathon kind of thing.
Is that at Esther Shore?
It's at Esther Shore. So, yeah, they expect a lot of people there, and I expect them to give them a lot of bandanas and a lot of bandanas.
Right. So the conversation, but what we're concerned predominantly with is the county fair and whether we want to participate in supporting that.
Right. And so...
I'm going to make the motion that we endorse and participate with a consortium that you will put together in terms of manning some hours and spreading the clean water message at the county fair.
And I would recommend that, knowing that,
So that's a motion. Does anybody want to second that motion? So then we're going to vote on the motion.
All in favor?
So.
Opposed?
Mark?
Aye.
Oh, thank you.
So unanimous.
And so your help is going to be tremendous. And
so we're in.
Great. Thank you. And
so our ask of you is to pull that together, and then in July, when we meet, we can get more specificity about what that can be.
Right. Yeah, that'll be great. And you know, if you guys want, because right now, you know, you guys don't have a. It'd be nice if you guys maybe had a brochure to say, oh, you know, I'm here talking about clean water, but I'm also a clean water commissioner. In fact, that. Shoot, I forgot to bring the name that.
The other guy.
But you know, you have one of those, and even if you wanted to have a little flyer that says something about what the Clean Water Commission is and does, that gives some information, you know, that actually gets them off the job.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. I like it.
Okay.
Cool.
Right. And, you know, okay.
No, I was just going to say, we need one more copy.
I
don't
know. You mean just fast and then pull out? Yeah. And, you know, this is just a kind of a pretty quick list I put together of some different outreach events that go on throughout the year. You know, we do some of them. We probably going to reevaluate doing some of them. We haven't done some of them. So. Yeah, you can look online and see a little bit more about what some of these are and get a feel for if it's something that you guys want to participate in, like a little bit of quite unfair.
So you actually have a booth or something like that? Oh, it's a Santa Fe Project.
Yeah, no, I don't right now. These are just some other things that that we have done in the past. I know I should have kind of put this together last minute, and I should have probably shown what we already are at and what we're not, but we're not at Dozer Day, we're not at Santa Cruz Farmers Market, we're not at a whole lot of neighborhood association meetings, but pretty much all the other ones we are. We haven't been at Klein Line Kids Fishing, which I think is a really good one. It's in April, which is like every weekend, but it seems like it'd be a good one too. And then the other thing I have here, I just want to get your feedback on it, regarding the Downspout Disconnect program. You want to move on to that thing? That would be a great time to let you know.
No, we have time.
So we're going to be having our first workshop to kind of kick off what this program is all about. And if you're unfamiliar with it, it's a pilot program targeting areas that basically built from homes built in the 60s to 2000 that have downspouts that are being standpipes, being weep holes directly to the street, no infiltration at all. Well, the truth be told, there actually is a lot of infiltration, or perhaps more than we think, because a lot of those pipes are broken underground, I think. People are spoken to anyway. And it's an incentive to disconnect your downspout and let infiltration go on, infiltration on site. And so this will be a workshop to basically tell a little bit more about that. And this pilot program, if you see the bottom there, is made possible by the Lower Columbia Fish Recovery Board grant through the Clark County Clean Water Fund Restoration Fund. So we're partnering with the Clark Conservation District for this. It's the first time that there's ever been financial incentive to do this. I think the thought behind it is for a pilot program, like, wow, you know, you can spend a lot of money on capital projects because it costs a lot of money to do. And, maybe this is another way to kind of disperse how that money is spent and potentially tackle a problem by engaging homeowners to do something and preventing it more from the source. And feel for what you feel about the verbiage here. One thing that Jane just threw this together today, she does a great job with all this kind of stuff. And one thing that caught my mind, and I'd like to just hear your feedback about it, was the sentence here, downspouts pours water directly to squeeze the storm drain. For one house, that could be about 33,000 gallons a year. And, for me, wearing my clean water hat, I'm like, yeah, you can disconnect that downspout and really do something. That's awesome. But I can see from the other side how people may be saying, do you want me to put 33,000 gallons of water on my car? So, that kind of thing, because this is something that's going to go out and hopefully attract people. So let me know if you have any feedback. That's going to be right now. You guys, I think I have my email address. I sent some emails out to you. But, I'd love to hear your feedback about this kind of, basically how you think it will be perceived by the public in many ways to improve the verbiage.
Well, so just initial question. Mm-hmm. Can you put a lot more specificity on what high priority Three Creeks neighborhood means? Because you may get inquiries from all over the place and be chasing your tail around trying to answer those questions. If there's a lot more specificity than that would likely be.
Like a site map?
Yeah, it might be really helpful. Like if you could say, here's the map, if you live in this area, you qualify.
Yeah.
Right?
Now, we will be doing the target now. I think this will go into that.
Even if you could live, even if you could limit it to like a zip code, mm-hmm. or something to that effect.
Yeah, we've got it even more dialed in than that. We actually have a list of properties that are in a specific area that are known to have downspouts draining directly to deep holes in the curb.
Even if the only thing you had there was go to this website address, mm-hmm. or to determine if you're qualified or something.
Yeah.
Well, I was just going to ask, how is the Three Creeks area identified as high priority?
So that area has been identified because that's where there are a number of homes that have that exact stormwater system.
So it's like a high, super high density, one of the highest density areas in the town?
Yeah. So like prior to the 60s, a lot of the homes just have splash blocks. But yeah, from that 60s to to the 90s, there's a number of homes that have that pipe straight down into that sand pipe right out to the deep hole in the curve. And so, we've gone through GIS data, and Jane has done a great job of really finding the areas of high priority, literally finding them, and getting addresses for those areas that we're going to be mailing out. I think it's like 4,000, somewhere between 4,000 and 8,000 homes that are in the high priority area, or areas, and we'll be doing mailings for that. I think we need 400 over the course of 2 years. Now, to give a little kind of touch back in the debrief of the Home and Garden Idea Fair, where we had a little display there of, I'm not sure if you guys saw the picture that I sent, but we had a little display of a downspout that had a standpipe there and disconnected onto a splash block. And that went over interestingly. I think a lot of that is a result of how much rain we've gotten this year, where a lot of eyebrows were raised, to be honest, where people were thinking, really? You want me to put all my roof water on my yard? And, of course, people's memory are sometimes going to be short, and they think about this year. That's very natural. And so I think the weather has given us an extra challenge for getting this program out, but you know, hopefully people see the financial incentives, and maybe that's something that needs to be emphasized more. This is what, the kind of stuff I'd love to hear feedback on. If you can, it's always hard. Everybody can, like, take who you are that brought you here, take that hat off, and, you know, try to put on a hat of who would never maybe come to this meeting and doesn't know anything about stormwater. What appeals to you then?
For us to think about, best to Eric, do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I suppose maybe with that regard, the 33,000 gallons, if somebody's already got their eco cap on, they're thinking it's great, I've mitigated that amount. But if you don't, as you refer to, it just becomes like the quantity of what they are. So trying to think about, like, what is the incentive to catch that person. And I don't know if you want to go this way, but if it's kind of like, you're beating more on the drum of a more modernized eco home. If you're referring to, like, the home design and less regard to the direct, like, amount of pollution or water impact that you're creating. Because right. Somebody's like, you know, this is kind of a modern retrofit that you put into their house. It's not really relevant to the quantity of pollution that
So maybe that volume thing is a little bit too technical, but certainly people want a green home.
Right.
And that's really good.
Kind of taking the Tesla approach with the alternative car. That's like, well, people who want an eco-friendly car, but Tesla wants to design, you know, this design fancy sports car that people want to have a sports car for. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah.
Thanks. Any other comments?
Well, I like the 33,000 gallons a year. I think it could be 33 gallons over a year or something like that, just to think of spread out as opposed to, like, all at once, because it does hit you and maybe that would, you know, sort of dispel the concerns that it would be, you know, right there all at, you know, sort of one time. I think people want to know that what they're doing is effective, that it really has some effect beyond that they're, you know, they're being green or that they're doing something that's new technology, novel technology. So I think having all three of those pieces there somehow is important. And your images here help with the novel technology and they're doing something green first. That number really fits, though, the effectiveness.
Yeah.
I still sort of go for it.
If it were a steering around, I'd buy it down to like day or week or something.
Make it a little smaller?
Right. That'd be 330 gallons on a rainy day.
Right.
Something like 330 gallons on a drive would sound like scary. But
yeah.
When you multiply it by your day, it's how much water is moving off the roof.
See, yeah. People are thinking about a gallon. You know, they just think about a gallon. 33,000 is more than they can really. 330 is still probably a little more, but it's in between, as you
like
said.
Like 80 gallons a day.
90. Huh? 90. Roughly.
Of course, you prefer to increase something, but
yeah.
But
we know that it's not going to be 90 gallons a day during peak rain season.
Yeah,
it's going to be more like 270 gallons, and then during the summer when it doesn't rain at all, it's going to be zip.
But yeah, I think that's the thing with the 33,000 is that people are going to make a mental image of their head if, like, their yard and 33,000 gallons of water and something
like
that.
Yeah, they're going to see a flood. Yeah.
90 gallons of water is like, how my yard is taking
And the other thing that I had mentioned that I would be interested in changing the room is Jane just put this together and asked us for some, I think there's some feedback that I want to put in here and ask for your feedback as well, so it's really open to some edits. Is that I'm a little bit unsure that people make the connection about why 33,000 gallons is bad for our streams coming off every house. And so maybe making the point more explicit about our streams were not meant to handle all the water coming off of everyone's property.
You know, I think you're going to end up getting into more technical stuff,
yeah.
Though if you try to say why it's not good for the streams, because it's not directly going into the streams. It's not taking a natural flow path, period, is what's happening. It goes to the streams, but it doesn't take the natural flow path, which would help clean it, essentially.
Yeah. And that
reduce
natural
heat,
flow path.
So.
Yeah, I like that. Kind of coalesces with that.
Mark, do you have anything to add to the downspouts? Mark? Do you have anything to add to the downspout conversation?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Jeff?
I was just going to say, if you did break this down to a daily amount and then have maybe a rain barrel there, I think people are really attracted to this rain barrel. It might really bring people into the village. People see that and decide if they're going to be better gardening or whatever. But they could, I guess. But I think that's real attractive to people. And then you can actually have something there to say, well, that's 50 gallons. So 90 would be an average for a day. At least you got a quantity to talk about.
Yeah, people do love rain barrels. They want something.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not a
candy. You know, treat people like retirement's not best for a rain barrel.
I agree with
that. Just people do want it.
Okay. Are we ready to move on to the working groups? I think we'll start with the research. Mainly because I have a lot of interest in people joining the research group. And I think it'd be a good opportunity. I'm not so concerned about evening out the working groups. I think right now we're really on a roll with partnerships and the communications. So research kind of hasn't done much until lately.
So recently?
And not that you haven't been doing anything, I don't mean to insult you, but just you're rolling. Yeah. You're just rolling on your stuff.
Just trying to get some traction here. So, yes. So Ray, if I could just start off here, can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so what I would, you know, I think it's really neat that we've got three members, and what I would encourage folks to do kind of on a regular basis is to go to our bylaws as a commission and kind of review what the overall purpose of the commission is. And for me, that's been kind of a good thing to do on a regular basis, and you know, at a minimum before each meeting. And so if I could kind of direct you guys all to the mission, the vision of our group here, there's a section 3 in the bylaws. You know, part of what we're trying to do, I don't expect you guys all to have it in front of you, but what I think part of what we're trying to do here is to recognize the importance of our involvement within the community, which I think is really neat that we're getting, you know, action going on in the communication partnership groups. But part of our role is to seek and recommend actions from the community that we can implement within the county that we can achieve consistent with our needs, if you will. So kind of rolling it up. Jeremy, do you have our deck out in front of everybody?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's ready.
Go ahead.
Okay, if we can go to the objectives of what we're trying to accomplish here is that as a research group, what we want to be able to do is to take some of the learnings that the communication and partnership groups kind of pulled together from community, and then roll that back into the county's capital planning system. And so part of what we try to do is to get a good understanding of
help explain to us, so we broke it down so it was actually readable in a slide deck. So hopefully it'll make it a little easier. But we've done some copies of that afterwards. When we met with Jeff, like Mark said a couple times, we were finally able to kind of break it down where their spending is and into these categories. So they have a maintenance and operations budget, category A, that's the under $25,000. Then they have capitalized maintenance that's over $25,000. And then they have an improvement projects that are significantly more than that. And then they have to plan for it. And then these are broken down in little subcategories that I'll go through here a little bit. But that kind of gives you an idea. Maintenance operations is, most of that is everything that's required in a 6 month, or an answer taken care of in a 6 month permit process. It's identified through inspections, and some of it's passed through from the other departments, some of the street cleaning, some of the other items are automatically just part of that category.
So just is that each individual project is that amount?
Yes, each little identified project is. So there's an A, there'll be a subcategory less than 5,000, and then there's another subcategory that's 5 to 25,000.
And that's over how long?
For the year.
For the year,
yeah. So today we're going to review that, review this that we're doing right now. In July, we'll get more details on the capital projects that are in there so that we have more information on it and be able to discuss it. And then by September meeting, we're hopefully able to provide them some input from our group, what we hear from the community, on what we think or suggest is important to follow up on or maybe include in their budget. Because prior to this, we've never had any insight into the budgeting really at all, I don't think, as a group. So in the A, maintenance and operations, the subcategory under 5,000, by permit you're required to inspect 95% of the assets, the things around our county. And it's, I guess, required for 6 months to 1 year. So everything is identified and needs to be repaired in that 6 month to 1 year time period when it's under this 5K. And everything that passes through there, a lot of this is done is routine mowing and vegetation, routine sediment cleanup that's out of the catch basins, inspecting the catch basins, maintenance on the bioretention, other complaint responses, and of course, the arterial street sweeping. So that just gets pretty much just taken. That's little things that there's zero control on ours in this group or in terms of our input. It's just kind of a pass through. And the non-routine repairs under 25K is the little other subcategory there. And they have up to 2 years to take care of those identified issues.
And you're having so much at the. If I can interrupt there a second, I think that the way I kind of characterize some of these things, if we want to kind of simplify this for us, is that we say we buy a car that we use to commute back and forth to work. The asset value of that vehicle is say $20,000. Just to maintain the value of the asset so that it's a reliable vehicle, we do these things that are called maintenance and operations to them, and so that's the changing of the oil, changing the tires when they wear out. It doesn't, you know, this particular spending, so I think you're looking at the slide that has $2 million on an annual basis there, that this particular block of money, these A blocks, from a Clean Water Commission standpoint, my suspicion is that most of these sorts of expenditures are not really all that interesting to us. We're probably going to be more interested in kind of longer term projects. But these sorts of expenditures don't do anything at all for us in the replacement of the vehicle. We're back to our car now. It doesn't do anything for us. We're on the replacement of the vehicle when the vehicle wears out, finally, when you make it properly, things wear out. And so that's where the next block comes in. So back to you, Jeremy.
Sure. And I would also add that this A category is about a third of the overall budget. So not much we can do about it on this maintenance side, but that is about a third. Category B is the capitalized maintenance for everything over $25,000. It's going to require 6-year priority. So that's new or retrofits, flow controls or treatment. Property acquisition, there's sometimes where it makes sense to buy a piece of property might come up that helps with taking care of water flow. Oh, and or partnerships, I believe they, again, remember Mark, they partnered with another group, another county group to buy a recent plot of land.
Yeah. The county parks.
Okay. Yeah. So sometimes a deal comes up that just makes the most sense to be able to get that piece of land that meets some of the goals of the department. This also includes forest restoration, some floodplain reconnection, and then the high threat underground injection control decommissions, the things that must be removed, I think.
So once again, Jeremy, if I could interject here, the microphone's cutting in and out there, so if I'm interrupting you, I apologize, but when we start looking at these B category projects, this is where we start thinking about this capital expenditure as kind of replacing the vehicle. The asset is, let's say, was reviewing maintenance and we're doing our annual inspections and we identify problem areas. We identify, you know, certain pieces of infrastructure within the community that have just, you know, kind of worn out and need to be replaced. And so this is where this block of money is expended. And so when I start thinking about, you know, back to the vehicle, when I start thinking about the fact that, you know, the vehicle is worn out and I need to replace it now, these B projects are the sort of projects kind of conceptual basis that we're actually replacing the vehicle. And so as we look at the $100 million capitalized value over the 30-year life cycle, I became somewhat, you know, concerned when I started looking at these levels of expenditure. Now, this is not to say that you can't have, you know, long periods of time where you're underspending. You know, we do that in business all the time when we have an asset that, you know, we need to, for whatever reason, we need to spend less money than we would, say, on a sustained basis. But at some point, you have to get to the point where you're sustaining your operation. This is something I think that the commission needs to really think about and have another opportunity to kind of work through as we go forward here. And so we do see this as a multiple discussion for us as we kind of push through this, and Andrea and Maria are part of the understanding what our sequence is here. So go ahead, Jeremy.
Great. And that brings us to the C category, which is the...
I'm sorry, just one question about the B before we went on. So that's about another one-third of the budget.
Yeah, it's 1.8 million, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And so the C category is the improvement projects. Maybe that's new roads and bridges, Mark, for the car. It's currently labeled as discretionary, so it's anything from B that's in excess of $1.5 million on a project level. Channel restoration, culvert replacement, and then the moderate threat UICs, which continues into the drainage basin. That's the scale southwest design. That's is that new? I'm not sure what that one is there. Then the reserves for emergency ERR and projects of opportunity, which also is kind of like the land purchased, sometimes the project of opportunities. And again, this one's only in that $500K to $1.2 million a year. And this is what's in the 6-year plan. So that's all that money is also dependent on what's approved in that 6-year plan. So, and what funding is available and or removed from the group.
Yeah, if I could interject one more time, Jeremy, I think for us as a commission, you know, going forward here is to get a better understanding of of how we prioritize the B level projects. Not that necessarily
I think that pretty much, yeah, so the six-year capital plan includes the B and C categories. So the A, the maintenance, is pretty much required. The B and C is part of the six-year plan.
Point of clarification on the previous slide, next to last slide.
We welcome feedback and this process. We're just starting here. We expect to have a report out in each of the next meetings or the next three meetings that we've got, and we'd like for you guys to give us some feedback in terms of how you see this as a value in the overall group. So.
So your point of clarification?
It was just, what is the ER plus R on that slide?
So it has to do with depreciation and also I think it's mostly depreciation as well as technical, and it has usually, we're always setting aside money for to move into a priority-based budgeting process that
I don't quite know how it's going to, when we actually get to budgeting, when it turns out the next biennial budgeting process, I don't think, I think we will still be in flux. So I don't know exactly how it's going to go. But we have the ability to carry over money, but so yes, we don't lose it. But we are definitely encouraged to use it.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's the part for me as far as getting involved more in the research part. I'm curious with, because having worked with some federal and city county stuff and then on the private end of it and being a contractor for agencies with those types of budgets, the thing that we end up seeing a whole lot is that use it or lose it situation, which becomes a real shame where if you have things like retrofits or emergency funds or properties that might pop up, it'd be really nice to have a cash reserve around and fluctuate with, but then when they run into that use it or lose it, money just gets dumped inefficiently just to spend it and just say we spent it, can we get that amount in our next budget to the taxpayers?
Yeah, I mean, for example, I have a project in the state of Nevada right now, and it's in the education side that they don't spend, they have an extra $1.6 million. If they don't figure out a way to spend it, it goes back to the general fund.
And
then
they want money again.
Yeah.
Because we're an enterprise fund, so we're primarily funded through the clean water fee, then that money can only be spent on certain things, which is why then it can't then get taken away and put into the general fund or anything like that. So that's one safeguard for us. And sets us apart from some other departments in and divisions.
And again, that's something that's going to be coming up too, is what we mentioned, is the clean water fee and what happens with the next fee review. Do we need to consider increasing or recommend increasing it based on what projects are out there in the assets, you know, maintenance that needs to be involved there? So that's part of what, as research team, we're looking into.
It seems to me that the asset reserve or the reserve around it to keep it, the maintenance high there. And keep its value up, essentially, is related on to the quality of the asset in the first place. So there's age, there's, you know, the materials that went into it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are some factors that might make a change over time.
Yeah, so there's a lot of 30-year assets that are, you know, yeah, what, how much more life do they have? And then what is the replacement or upgrade cost? Or,
right.
That are coming up. So
yeah, and there could be 10-year assets that, and you found that the materials were bad or right. Something, you know, like that.
Yeah.
That after a while you learn and you grow.
Yeah.
You know, so those stuff kind of things.
Thank you, Mark. Are you still going to be the chairman of that subcommittee?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it actually. I think we're really developing a lot of.
Projects ahead, I think that's fine to have five people on your team with both the budget coming up and the clean water, and then working with the communication partnerships to do some outreach on these more technical with the right proper, you know, partners, you know, not the general public. So
yeah.
That would leave four people in communications and partnerships if you don't do any cross mingling, which I think would be fine. I think we identified a lot of partnerships last year. That committee didn't have a lot on their plate, so I'd be willing to jump into partnerships and communications, and then we'll go around the room and make sure everyone wants to be in the
working group they want to be in, because obviously you want to be doing something that you enjoy. So, David, do you still want to stay in communications? And yes, okay. Research?
Yeah. Personally, yeah, just because it helps me understand what's going on.
Okay. Michelle, research?
Yeah, research. But I hope to be and plan to be at some of these, you know, outreach events and so forth. So,
yes.
You know, I'll be in some of the partnership meetings. So, you know.
Jeff?
Research or partnerships is fine.
Okay. Jeremy?
Yeah, research is fine, and I still have out on the communication with you.
So we'll kind of do a little less 333 this year, and we'll just kind of go where we go. And we'll all work together and just use the Googles to, you know, communicate and check your email.
Use the Googles.
Use the Googles, the Sheets, the Docs, communicating. And then setting up a, you know, sub little meetings, like you guys have been meeting separately.
Yeah.
Just report back to us so that we have it in the minutes. And we can put in our report what we've been doing and who went where.
That was a great overview. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. You did a great job. Okay. So there's no one here technically from partnerships. So that's Holly and Dick. Anything new on communications that you'd like to bring up, David, that we haven't addressed?
No, I think we covered earlier when we talked about getting engaged with the community and really trying to help out and be out there and communicate with folks and let them know what we're about.
I attended the Oregon Water Association Environmental School. It's called the Short School for wastewater operators and stormwater, wastewater. And I listened to a Effectiveness of Outreach Efforts by John Halvick, who works for a research firm marketing in Portland. And he had some really interesting facts. I'll just share with you a little bit here. He said that most people don't know their demographics, and when you start asking people what's the percentage of ethnic races or salaries or education, people are always way off. He thought it was interesting that in Oregon, 11% of the population did not graduate from high school, and 11% of the population has a PhD. Okay. Some tips for outreach. He said that really saving money is a low matter of importance. So he's saying know the community, connect to the values that people move to the Pacific Northwest, good drinking water, recreation opportunities, and water quality. But people, if you ask them where their water comes from, they don't know. And the other half just guesses. So we're linking to your drinking water, and when you talk about that, actually mention the lakes, the streams, be very specific to kind of, you know, the Columbia River, the Salmon Creek. Simple steps to change behavior, which your handout was perfect for that. You know, one thing at a time, take your pledge. And partnership with small businesses and be persistent. And he was saying that for agencies that make have bills, you know, put them in with the bills, and that's good for 34 years and older. But if you're dealing with the 18 to 34, then social media and text is the best way to communicate. So, that's a good
text
alert messages.
Wow.
Yeah.
You can use some Snapchat.
Yeah, social media, good one. Get the message out.
I'm learning.
And they do care about if the government is giving them value for their taxes that they're paying. So again, when you start getting into the capital program funding, you know, having people equate what they're getting from the tax dollars. So he gave me his card, and he said, he said feel free to share my lecture, no problem.
What was that name?
It was John Halvick, and I'll scan his card and send it to you. I thought I had it with me, but I think it was just like the numbers.
Did he have a presentation that he made that you have a copy of?
No, we didn't get copies of the presentation. But I can, maybe I'll check with the school and see if I can get something.
Would he release his slides yet?
I think he would, because he was very, definitely wanted people to, you know, learn and share.
Yeah, because it sounds like he had some good ideas about
and, you know, working with that kind of marketing.
The people that we need to communicate with.
There's also, I should mention, an event coming up in June or the end of May, put on by the Lower Columbia Estuary Partnership down at the Hilton here on conveying science policy to the general public.
Is that this one that there's a page in here about it? No. The downspout disconnect is June 20th.
Oh, yeah. It's during the day.
It's in the evening, but but it's during the day there as well. It's a Monday. It's not a Monday.
Tuesday.
Can you send me his contact information as well? I'd like to talk with him. Sounds like a sharp guy.
Yeah, it was a great presentation. Any other things people want to bring up for new business?
So I just wanted to make sure hopefully everyone received an email that was about priority-based budgeting and getting your input. So but there is a link to a survey, and so if you didn't get the email, but they are feeling like the advisory commission input will be
what's the deadline for that?
Did they want to put as the advisory committee, or I just came across my emails and I thought before I can't remember.
Okay, so I think it's from as an advisory commission member. So you are representing, you know, you're also a citizen in that capacity. So I think you could be in both. I don't remember what the date it needs to be done. I want to say it was maybe just a couple weeks, but it's going to happen. I don't think it was just immediately. I think there's a little bit of time.
Yeah.
Very.
We don't do it right away.
That's how much you do this.
Well, this is the time to share stuff you've heard recently. Earlier today, I was at the LID, which is a low-impact development training of Olympia that they were doing for various municipalities more in the Puget Sound area, but it was put on by Herrera, and also had a speaker from. I believe she works for the city of Seattle, but she may have been wearing a different hat for this. But I'll be curious learning more about how the recommendations are kind of put together for these budget proposals and pieces, because I know Mark was mentioning that they're, you know, limited flexibility with issues like maintenance, and a large part of what that conversation was there was talking to planners and inspectors about a lot of the initial design on the stormwater facilities and the ripple impact that has long-term over maintenance, so that like it is a small project individually, but then over time that maintenance budget becomes a huge part of it for them. So it was going down to really simple things like planting this plant versus that plant and how it's going to make a huge impact over the years for an area where you have hundreds of them. So some interesting pieces. And I'll be curious to know more like what degree of input we're providing at that level.
Yeah, I mean, just from our initial discussions from that maintenance part is from a different department. Not a lot of insight that we actually get into. It's kind of those routine cleaning and maintenance that are, especially under 5K, which I'm sure is a ton of them, they just get filled out to the department when I don't know the groups are that do it.
It's in Public Works.
Yeah, it's still Public Works, but they do the maintenance, and then it gets taken. It's just like a crossover, so there's not a lot of visibility necessarily. Mm-hmm. Nor do we necessarily want to get into
the minutia.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it's definitely valid on that initial design, how it's snowballing.
I mean, I know that at least from my own work, that I see a lot going into different cities and stuff, and myself and other crew members will look at them and be like, how many expenses to retrofit later?
Yeah. I think there is issue with also disconnect between the development of the community and then what is actually going to work.
And
kind of, I think there's continuous effort in trying to all of this whole
Well, we've been doing a lot of bridging that gap in Gresham because we have all of the developers required to put them in, so then they put them in and then they come under the city's control, and the city often has to spend a huge amount of money retrofitting and overhauling. And so we're trying to work with the developer and the city and kind of make that connection. It's easier in Gresham, similar to moving smaller area, whereas Portland's just way too much of a mess.
And I think there's other challenges too, because some of the projects that get put in here from previous meetings, some of them are grandfathered in from 8 years ago design,
sure.
8 years ago design, so that makes it a big challenge too.
Yeah, and that stuff is still definitely going on.
Oh, right, there's that controversy of it's already in place, right, versus
right.
We're putting something new in place, that's a different question, and if. But there may be also homeowner impacts that we can communicate in our own communications that basically educate the public, the homeowner community, that, you know, if they are going to be redesigning or re-landscaping their own properties, the kinds of things that they would want to consider, and just the brief thing that you had mentioned, you know, that if you plant this, it's more beneficial to soaking up the water than if you plant this other thing. And landscape designers don't really care. They're out there to make a few bucks. And if they make a few bucks more selling the thing that's not going to be great, you know, the homeowner doesn't necessarily know. They think, oh, the landscaper is giving me good advice, but We have an opportunity to create some positive impact.
Is there any kind of a monitoring program going on now, maybe in conjunction with Washington State around LID installations? I mean, I know that in streams there are some extensive, and in lakes and so forth, but around BMP or installations themselves?
Not at this point. The county is definitely not doing anything like that. And I would imagine, and I haven't heard discussion at this point of anything in the works, but certainly that would be a really exciting thing to do.
Might be a partnership before.
Right.
And there are the LID. In the spring, I think I went to it last year that they do down here, and there was a lot of county people at that, as well as contractors and everything, in terms of some of the best practices for that module. There's like, I'm assuming it's very similar, so there's different modules. There's like level 2, level 3, level 4, depending on where you're at on the scope of it. So that was the level 2 section. Get more familiar with the LID process, but so at least it looks like they're trying everybody here. Educate as much as possible or introduce to it.
It's such an involving field, and it's so the effectiveness is actually pretty site selective, I think, more so than.
Right.
And maybe than we know right now in Clark County.
Yeah, they were from Seattle who did it, so the glacial ground, you know, this ground versus down here, so there's definitely some design.
Even between Portland and Gresham, Portland soil composition is totally different than Gresham, and they're implementing the same design, like clay.
Yeah, and that my understanding that it can be an issue with taking, like, if you're looking at Washington State and certain things, or even Western Washington, what works in the Puget Sound and how it works.
Yeah.
County.
You can hear, like, the cameras, it's so hot in the rain, right?
for that similar reason.
Yeah.
For the commission discussions. And if you can think about presentations or things you'd like to have the county or anyone come and give us a talk on, or if you know someone that would do a presentation that would be good to the group, just let Andrew know. It's open for learning. I think everyone's got a big curiosity part of them here. I'd love to hear what other people are doing and what works.
I do have one other question. After looking through some of the background material from last year, you presented to the Neighborhood Association, the overall council, a great presentation. I wondered what kind of follow-up. Have any of the neighborhood associations requested individual presentations or anything? Is there any,
no.
Anything that happened?
But we do have Mr. Stubbs here.
Oh.
From the Neighborhood Association.
Hi. I'm not really sure.
My name is Art Scubbs. I sit on the Neighborhood Association Council for Clark County. I was in task force to set up this program about, 20 years ago, and sat on the commission for about 15 years. I would thank all of you for the service that you're doing here. Some of the questions that I would have, or comments that I would have to you, because I want to report back to the neighborhood, Clark County Neighborhood Association. How do each of you, or have you collectively, come up with a method of measuring your cost benefit on any of your capital programs? Have you come up with a measurable graph on after a capital program is put in that it has done any good at all? This, you know, I don't expect answers right now. Is all of the money paid by individual homeowners as their clean water fee, does that still completely stay in the program? Or is it, it's not part of the general fund, never had it?
No.
Okay, that's fine. That was one of the questions that I was being asked. I was sure that it stayed. Are you, as a commission, getting involved with the construction industry on new construction and trying to mitigate the stormwater on the new construction, whether it's commercial or residential, to maintain it on the property, stormwater on the property, rather than as viable swales? Is there anything else? Are they still trying to put in filter banks? And is that one of the costs associated with the program? It's quite high several years ago, I know, in replacing the filters in the filter banks.
Okay, yeah.
The other question I had, or statement, individually or collectively, if you had all the money you wanted, what would you want the program to do? if you had an unlimited budget, what would you want the program to do? And how would you promote that to the community? Restock fish and have rivers filled with salmon again as they were 50 or 60 or 80 years ago, whatever. You know, some of the things to think about. These are the things that come out in community meetings. The other one that's going to impact me immediately, how's the loss of over $1 million to your program going to affect you by the annexation of the Vancouver Mall and Green Meadows area?
Yeah, we're starting to deal with that.
Okay.
Is that approximately 900 residents?
I don't know if that's been discussed yet. On your downspout program, when you're talking about disconnecting or doing a downspout program, which was done in Portland about 18 years ago, the difference, I don't know if it's going to be the same here or not, or if you're proposing it to be the same. The difference in Portland was their annual fee was over $100, and if you disconnected your downspout, you got $15 a month or something off of your bill. The early commission here decided they would not go for a fee for disconnecting downspouts, and that the total amount of money they were collecting for the total program would, you know, it would just jeopardize the program too much. If everybody came in and said, you know, I want $50 or I want $20 to disconnect my downspout, that's money right out of your pocket as far as your program is concerned. I didn't think the program could afford it then, neither did any of the commission members, and I don't know if it could afford it now. It's still a matter of education, I see it as. Do you still have a watershed congress with schools every year?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Fantastic. Why isn't it publicized now?
That's a good question.
I sit on the finance committee for the Vancouver School District. I was in contact with the school districts in the county, and you have some pretty dedicated people in each of the schools that are trying to do a program. I don't know if any of you have gotten a chance to review them or go look at them or talk to the people. You may want to invite them to your meeting and have them explain what their programs are, how the kids are impacted by it. And there really is nothing greater than an enthusiastic fourth grader to teach you about clean water, whether it's your child or your grandchild. Believe me, I've gone through both of them. Other than that, I don't really have much more for you.
I can speak to the downspout disconnection project. So at this point, that was just a pilot project. We are being funded through a grant, and that's how we're going to be able to give, and there will be a monetary incentive to households who qualify.
Okay.
But it's not a reduction in your clean water fee, your annual clean water fee. It's just an incentive, a one-time incentive.
Excellent.
Well, it looks like it's reimbursement for costs.
Yeah.
Right. Which means there's less of a cost for enforcement, there's less of a cost for implementation, and I don't know that they intend to have someone do a truck roll to go out and observe, but they certainly could require receipts and photographs demonstrating that it has been accomplished.
Are they going to have a team doing this, or are they going to rely on the homeowner to do it?
Yeah, I think it's homeowner do-it-yourselfers willing to do it because they see the benefit.
Yeah.
That's how I'm reading this flyer.
Right.
Did you get a copy of the flyer?
No.
Would you like to have a copy?
Not really.
Okay.
I have all the reading material. I get it also online.
There's going to be a workshop.
One of the problems that comes in, and it came in Portland very early on when you're disconnecting your downspouts and putting in splash blocks, is a lot of people have basements and crawl spaces.
Right.
And the splash box will take it out, you know, a foot and a half from the house. But then it disperses and it goes right back under the foundation or in the basement.
Right.
That's why, and when they first started talking about it, I said, you know, if they had private enterprise, a team that would go out and do this, because you're literally talking about putting like 8 or 10 or 12 foot of pipe out away from the house to disperse this water.
Right.
I wouldn't really want the homeowner coming back at me saying, you know, this is your idea. Now I have mold under my house.
Yeah.
Well, the problem with
that kind of soil.
You can't do just one thing is the problem. No. That's with anything.
If you have a what they call the rain garden, but you've got it, you know, 20 feet away,
absolutely,
that's one thing. But if you've got it the way they've got this infiltration trench, it looks right by the front door.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, right. I'm hearing you. and if you've got those,
I built spec houses years ago in commercial units also. One of the things I hated about new construction or any construction was downspouts or gutters. They were, to me, the biggest waste of time in the world. You know, add a foot to your overhang and let the water fall and put a French drain around the house and let the stuff go back into the ground.
Right. Well, a French drain, of course, is a lot more expensive than a $240 contribution reimbursement for supplies.
But not on new construction. You got all your equipment there. Yeah. Throw in some gravel and you're home free. Yeah. Regardless. thank you again. I really do appreciate the time that you people spend on this. And it sounds like you got your heads on straight. You got a great, great thing going on your budget. My concern was always you never had enough money to do what was needed to be done. And nobody was willing to ask for more. There was some real consternation. I suggested that the fee go up to about $125 a year. Politicians don't like that.
No.
But with that amount of money, I thought, you know, the original budget was supposed to be $50, and I got talked down to the 35, which was dumb to begin with, because it left nothing in there for capital.
So, Mr. Stubbs, if you go back to your neighborhood association and your groups and let them know that, you know, we are available to give talks to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Appreciate that.
Thank you again.
Okay. Any other comments before we adjourn? Okay. The meeting is now adjourned.